Hello, I'm Liam Ford, a senior reporter at InfraLogic. Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. We're joined today by two attorneys of counsel at Ropes & Gray. Pete Scherer, who's based in Boston, is part of the firm's Real Estate Investments and Transactions Group. He represents private equity clients, endowments, and financial institutions, among others, in commercial real estate acquisitions, dispositions, and financings, with experience across the full spectrum of asset classes and structures. Dima Orandaritz, based in London and also in the Real Estate Investments and Transactions Group at the firm, has advised both lenders and sponsors on high-profile real estate finance transactions. His experience ranges across real estate classes, including data centers, logistics, and student housing. Pete and Dima are going to help us explore recent developments in the data center space, following up on a recent commentary from Ropes & Gray on what they called the taxonomy of data center investment. Gentlemen, welcome to Crossroads.
Thank you, Liam. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Liam.
We wanted to explore a little bit, following up on the commentary, what the difference between the traditional real estate investor approach to data centers and the usual infrastructure investor approach, just to get us started.
Thanks, Liam. I'll start us off, and I'll let Dima sort of layer in on top of this response. I have a bit more of an equity background, and Dima has a bit more of a finance background, so hopefully we can together bring the full picture to this podcast. I think we sort of, to answer that question, you need to start with the basics of like what makes a real estate investment or historically versus an infrastructure investment. In our view, in my view, the key to a real estate investment is really the focus on, you know, the ownership, development, management, disposition of a real estate asset, physical plant, the buildings. You know, historically, we're not talking about toll roads or telecoms, right? And, you know, that has ripple effects throughout the structure and what you focus on, for example, in diligence. So in real estate investing, you'll have a lot of joint ventures. You'll focus on concrete diligence issues such as title, entitlements, leases, environmental review, and a little bit less on things like operational risks. For traditional infrastructure, you know, that is an investor that is focused on long-term stabilized cash flows, typically tied to physical assets with a moderate risk return profile. I think it's much more typical, historically at least, for an infrastructure investor to be investing in sort of an operating business. So they have more experience around considering operational risks and sort of taking a go-forward perspective on the considerations when evaluating the cash flows for an overall platform versus an individual asset. And that's a long way of saying it's a bit more of a PE style historically investment as compared to real estate investment. So you might, where you'd have a propco and a JV or a propco and an opco, it may be a more vertically integrated structure. Dima, I don't know if you wanted to add anything on the top of that, just from a general or from a debt perspective of sort of how you view infrastructure versus real estate.
By all means, I think when you look at a data center or other infrastructure asset from a real estate finance perspective, you mostly focus on the asset, as you said, which would be true for a real estate equity investor. So real estate finance providers, they want to be close to the asset. That's true. Their underwriting is focused on stable lease, cash flow. Valuations are based on net operating income primarily. And in terms of financial covenants, they would be typically focused on LTV and DSCR or debt service coverage ratio. In terms of due diligence, their focus will be very similar to what you've described. They will be focused on title and the asset, whereas the infrastructure investors, they will be much more focused on stable cash flows. Their underwriting will be primarily based on discounted cash flows. And in terms of diligence, they will probably put a bit more focus on contracts to ensure the cash flow stability and things like power resilience, uptime resilience, and connectivity. I would mention those things.
We've been hearing a lot at InfraLogic lately about the trend of bringing together the varying approaches to data center investing. Can you guys give us a sense of what's driving that trend and what it looks like?
Sure. I'll start this one again. You know, I think calling any trend and giving a narrative weight to it means summarizing or trying to capture a bunch of sort of disparate drivers that all put together, no individual cause, but put together are sort of causing the market to adjust. And with the background, I think there's a bunch of different factors that have sort of led in the past couple of years in a continuing trend for some of these historical silos between infrastructure investing and real estate investing, and I would even put in there PE investing, to start to blur. From my perspective, I think probably the biggest driver is the elevated interest rate environment. When central banks throughout the world started raising rates, you know, that has a bunch of knock-on effects, especially for such capital-hungry assets as data centers. But, you know, as interest rates increase, asset values are somewhat depressed. That has a knock-on effect of slowing dispositions, further knock-on effect of slowing capital raises for traditional strategies, right? So you have all these traditional sponsors, you know, the machine that was expecting there to be low interest rates for the long duration got knocked off its planned trajectory. And so you have a lot of, I think, sponsors across in the private markets across historical silos trying to sort of fine tune and adjust their business models in response to that. Driver one. Driver two, I think data centers, especially with the advent of AI, which had been bubbling for a while, but really hit the scene only a couple of years ago, is just this enormous, enormous demand for capital and this huge potential growth market. So you have these absolutely mammoth companies thinking that this new initiative is existential to the risk, and it's hugely capital intensive, but there's just a huge rush to meet that demand. There's headwinds in many other sectors. So you have real estate investors saying, you know, hey, this looks pretty great. There's demand. I can raise capital. You have PE investors who are saying, hey, it's harder to make opportunistic or value add returns for my traditional plays, but like these data center platforms look good. You have traditional infrastructure investors saying like, hey, don't forget about me. I was here the whole time, right? So you have a confluence of drivers. And I think I would, you know, put on top of that, at least in the real estate space, for a long time, real estate had a pretty stable business model. On the equity side, you had capital partners who would bring money and networks and connections and asset management skills to the table. And you had local developers or operators who would bring a deal pipeline and local skill sets together. They would do a joint venture. It was a standalone basis. But over the past few years, there's been some evolutions, which is a whole separate topic, but some evolutions in how those economics are split between traditional LPs and traditional GPs, with each sort of poaching each other's business. And I think since that existing trend, in light of the headwinds facing the industry generally, in light of the attractiveness of data centers as a general asset class, in light of PE, traditional PE investors looking for new opportunities, it's all coming together where all these groups are starting to sort of look at the same asset with a slightly different lens and realize there are some synergies and some differences, and it's leading to a real hybridization. You know, take, for example, combining an infra team with a real estate team. You know, the infra team may have some more experience to understand how to underwrite operational risks and some perspective there. The real estate team may have a much better handle on like development risks or title risks. And you put those together, the whole is potentially greater than the two halves, especially in a competitive marketplace. Again, Dima, sorry for always going first, but I don't know if you have anything to add there.
Obviously, I agree with what Peter has just said. But to add to that, I think data centers, they are appealing to both real estate and infrastructure investors and lenders because they possess features which are most appealing to those two different types of investors and lenders. On the one hand, you have a physical asset, which is something which is historically interesting to real estate-focused investors. On the other hand, you have an operational asset, which is part of critical infrastructure with stable cash flows, long-term cash flows. And those are features which are historically more attributed to infrastructure-focused investors and lenders. So when you take a data center, that combines those features within one asset. And naturally, that brings the attention of both classes of investors and lenders. On the other hand, apart from those just features, as Peter has said, it's an appealing source of cash flow. It's reliable. Yes, it's operationally heavy. And that's why you need to possess expertise in both what's typical for real estate investment and what's typical for infrastructure investments. And that's where you see the convergence, because even within one organization, two groups may be reliant on the expertise of each other when they underwrite an asset such as a data center.
Great, thanks. In Robeson Gray's recent commentary on data center investing, it seemed like you were warning against applying the wrong set of experiences to data center investing. Why would a firm try to take another approach to data center financing from what they've done in the past? And what are some of the risks if they take one they're not familiar with?
To answer in reverse order, you know, why you might take a different approach, I think draws on the, you know, maybe you're just getting into the space, but you come from a PE background, right? And so you sort of, I guess it's, you have a natural bias, you know, if you, or some of the drivers we were just talking about in the consolidation, it's a competitive market, you're seeing some of the synergies at play and you want to explore those things. So, you know, I think that's what's driving investors to rethink things. But as far as the risks, I think our comments, or I know our comments were driven at the basic human tendency to revert to what you know, right? And so there's always a bias if you come from, let's say, a PE background to assume that like what you've been doing for the past 10 years is the best way to handle investment and to look at assets and businesses as just that, as businesses and vertically integrated and focus on the operational risks, right? But I think you need to have some self-awareness that, you know, real estate is a big industry. There are norms and customs that are there for a reason. And, you know, for example, a traditional joint venture is a pretty good way, a pretty efficient way to get a building built. And so if you are just wanting to get some exposure to data centers, let's say, and you're somewhat platform agnostic, well, then you may want to look at more of a traditional real estate structure, depending on sort of the specific details, because it is, in fact, a pretty efficient way to deploy capital, to access the real estate lending market, to learn from your operating partner. And I actually think that's why you're seeing on some of the bigger data center platforms, you're seeing a lot of big news about hyperscale campuses with joint ventures below the platforms, right? And historically, maybe they would have tried to build those centers on their own, but when it's a one-off asset that's going to be built and they have the operational skill set, they're effectively the operating partner, and it's a good way to bring in additional equity. I think, you know, the same applies to traditional real estate investors. We've, as I mentioned earlier, there's been some evolutions in the real estate investing market generally, but I caution my clients who have been exploring those topics to really think long and hard if they're equipped to handle an operating business. That means not just understanding the differences of the underwriting standards, but like, do you know anything about laws governing employment? Do you know anything about competitive terms for executive compensation? Have you ever set up like an IP system? Are you ready to have all these questions around just running the business and branding and whatever else flow up to your investment team? Where normally you just look at the real estate and you look at how it's performing and you sort of have some expertise in, you know, you understand title risk, you understand design and construction risk, but like those are pretty discrete issues and you've historically in real estate, you've deferred all that operating messiness to your operating partner, right? And if you want to sort of invest in the platform, all of a sudden it's your issue. And that may make sense for an investment and it may not. And I think, you know, our commentary is really focused on like, this is an exciting time. There's a lot of innovation. It's new ways of doing business, all which is great. There is an element of like, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Think long and hard about your specific situation and your specific deal and don't just sort of chase what's new and shiny.
Right. So keep on your skill set.
That's exactly right. Just like I'm going to stick to being a lawyer after this podcast versus going after your job, Liam.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, Liam, I would probably just add that obviously you may be over-reliant on your particular expertise. So if you approach a data center financing as a real estate investor, you may be misunderstanding income risk because if you come to it with a lease-backed cash flow approach, you may underestimate the technology obsolescence risk and how that will impact the lease income in the long or medium term. You may underappreciate development risk because not every real estate investor would think about connectivity delays necessarily when approaching something as a real estate investment rather than as a data center or infrastructure investment, which is heavily reliant on power. Some investors may overpay for stabilized assets because they underappreciate the operational risk of the asset, like a data center or any other operationally heavy infrastructural asset. So those factors should always be kept in mind.
Actually, Dima, I wanted to follow up on one thing you mentioned. Again, with my biases, which I wear proudly as a real estate guy and an equity guy, you know, I think sometimes that people try to overcomplicate data centers. At the end of the day, it's kind of a big chilled box. But as a counterpoint to that, I think one of the things that like my client base looking at data centers needs to understand is that this is not like an office building that is leased to a bunch of law firms, right? The offtake contracts for data centers are an animal unto themselves within the real estate world. If you have disputes or terminations, it's very different than like evicting a tenant. The whole concept of performance credits, where if the data center operator doesn't meet uptime requirements or on-time delivery, there's these pretty punitive penalties potentially for against the platform. That is pretty rare, not impossible, but like most tenants and most other aspects of real estate don't have leverage to negotiate anything close to that. You know, the economics are completely different from a traditional real estate lease. And so again, it's just this area where data centers just cut across a lot of norms. And I think both on the investing and on the legal side, you know, you really need practitioners who kind of, or teams assembled of groups of practitioners who have experience in both spaces to really be successful.
Great, thanks. We really only have time for one more question, and I did want to get in a little bit of an exploration of other asset classes other than data centers, where you're seeing some convergence of real estate investor and infrastructure investor activity. And can you give us some examples and how that's playing out where you guys work?
100%, Liam. We see some convergence not only in data centers, because obviously data centers is one of the prime examples of this convergence, but assets like telecom towers, for instance, historically more suitable for real estate investors, now they're also viewed as part of critical infrastructure, and that makes them more appealing and interesting to classic infrastructure investors. Other assets which maybe historically were viewed more as real estate investments, such as logistics or cold storage, they are becoming increasingly interesting to infrastructure investors because of the added automation and the critical need and that they are required in the global supply chains, which makes them more attractive to infrastructure investors. New asset classes such as EV charging stations, for instance, combining real estate and infrastructure-like features, and things like battery storage, for instance, which is similar to a certain extent to data centers because it's being viewed by infrastructure investors as part of critical infrastructure, more on the techie side, yet it involves a physical asset, which is of interest to a real estate investor or lender.
And I would add to that, it's a little bit more of social infrastructure, but senior housing and student housing, with the common theme being that those are real estate assets, but like data centers, there is value to investing in the platform as an operational vehicle versus just the physical real estate, the bricks and sticks, as we say, in real estate, because of the specialized nature of the management or the specialized nature of the buildings, or in the case of senior housing, needing to understand how the regulatory regime affects the investment structures.
You're not just setting it up with maintenance and janitorial services. You have a lot more going on in both those cases.
Exactly. And especially on senior housing, I have learned it is state by state, and there is a true moat where you need the platform and the experience to understand how to navigate it.
Great. Guys, I'm afraid that's all the time we really have. Thanks so much, Pete and Dima. Really appreciate your coming on. Thanks to everyone in our audience for listening. Please subscribe to Crossroads wherever you get your podcasts and like and share it on LinkedIn and other social media.